Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, good evening. My name is Don Beaton, and I am the author of The Return Viewer's Guide. I'm coming to you from Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and it is May 1st, 2010, and there are only 1,117 days left until the ancient object of the crossing down returns. You can forget all about December 21st, 2012. Nothing is going to happen. Instead, in all probability, May 22nd, 2013 is the date of the next return, as I very accurately described having seen the ancient object cross down in 1970. By listening to or reading my descriptions of the ancient celestial object I saw, and my descriptions of the changed and lasting light event that is generated by the ancient object, a person has a chance to hear the basic idea of exactly what happens when the ancient object crosses down. A person can do this without having to decide for themselves whether or not my descriptions are accurate and whether or not I am a credible person. I freely provide my descriptions without any expectation that you or anyone else will believe my descriptions. People believing my descriptions is not the point for me, or even very important for me. Instead, the point is, people have a chance to hear exact descriptions of what happens when the ancient object crosses down in front of the moon, even though these people can't and don't have any way of knowing if my descriptions are real or not. I can do this. I can accomplish this goal without actually needing to provide proof of what I saw. The topic of tonight's show is the object. And that title is a title I gave to a page after I had written it. This is one of my early pages that I wrote. Actually, probably wrote this page before my original returnviewersguide.ca website went online. And then over time, after the site was online for a couple of years, I added more material in to that page. I added to it and put in little paragraphs and points and topics for discussion that are related to the actual physical object itself. And so it's sort of a hodgepodge towards the end, as they say. So anyways, that's the basic idea of what that page is. After I wrote the page, I was really at a loss as to what to call it. So I just titled it The Object. And as it turns out, that really is the basic idea of the page, is the object, even though I discuss many other things on that page. Tonight, for the first time, I am not using my chat room, and I am going to use the chat again. But as far as tonight is concerned, I have decided to not use the chat room tonight, so I'm sorry to those who regularly visit me in the chat, and you know who you are. Sorry about that, and hopefully you'll still get a chance to listen live or later in the archives. And I want to thank everybody, each and every person who decides to listen to the show, both live tonight and also later in the archives. I just want to mention quickly here that on my show page, there is a link to Blog Talk Radio Battle of the Bulge, and that is Mr. Timothy J. Thompson's show page here at Blog Talk Radio. Tomorrow night, May the 2nd, 2010, at 10 p.m., I am very pleased to be guesting on Timothy's show, and so if you have a chance, definitely tune in live. Join in the chat room. I'm sure Tim will have his chat room up. Ask some questions if you like. And also later listen to Tim's show, that show later in the archives, and also check out Tim's other shows. He is a historian, published author, and he has a series of books coming out focused basically on the Battle of the Bulge. The first one is Watch on the Rhine. I can't say the German title itself. And the second one, The Ardennes on Fire, Volume 1. So I definitely encourage you to check out Tim's radio show archives and also check out his webpage at panthertank.net. Just a quick recap. As a boy, back in 1970, I saw the ancient celestial object that crosses down between the Earth and Moon. The ancient celestial object that I saw is the ancient object of the crossing down. The very same celestial object that the ancient people always looked forward to seeing. The moon-colored, forward-rolling object crosses down between the Earth and Moon. The crossing ancient object intercepts and changes and transforms the light from the Moon. The ancient object has hundreds of incredible, impressive craters. Every crater is neatly ringed by massive, towering, vertically standing crater rim pieces. A shadow develops on the surface of the crossing speeding object. Each of these vertically standing crater rim pieces casts its own individual shadow. All of these individual shadows travel off the surface of the crossing object into the distance of the moon's captured and transformed light. To the right, find and follow the biggest, tallest, black shadow into the distance to the right. A very incredible effect occurs. Each individual shadow somehow sculpts and shapes and creates solid-looking forms and shapes with and out of the moon's changed and now suddenly lasting light. Incredibly, the interactions between the individual shadows and the wave of the shadow as I describe and the changed and lasting light somehow happens exactly the same way every time this repeating event reoccurs. When I describe what I saw happen during the ancient object's last crossing down, I am also describing exactly what is going to happen and exactly what will be seen the next time the object crosses down. The celestial object I saw and describe is, in fact, the ancient object of the crossing. The ancient object crossed down and obscured the moon's disk the night of May 24, 1926, as described by German amateur astronomer Mr. W. Spill. I believe I saw the ancient object of the crossing down between the Earth and Moon the evening of May 18, 1970. With the moon correct and the double star Spica in place in the background of space, I predict the ancient object will cross down again the night of May 22, 2013. We will see. Either way, no matter what, the ancient object will return and cross down and change the light from the moon and the background of space again, and that's guaranteed. I just want to quickly mention here that I have a book for sale, a book that is an historic document and a collector's souvenir. All of the content from my book is actually free online, and that is a very important point. All of my material is free for everyone to read and know, everyone who is interested in reading and knowing it. On my returnviewersguide.ca website, the bottom of the homepage, and on my returnguidebook.ca website, a website done in support of my book, on that homepage, you will find listed the three pages on my original returnviewersguide.ca website where all of the content for my book was drawn. All the content is there. Now, slightly different order, depending on which page you read first, but it's all there. And the point is, I have a book for sale, and it is a collector's souvenir, and it is a historical document, and one day it will be recognized as being so. If you're in the Toronto, Mississauga, Ontario area, Oakville, Ontario, you can call Booker's Bookstore at 905-844-5501 and make arrangements to pick up my book from them at 172 Lakeshore Road East. Oakville's most popular bookstore is located in the heart of the community's thriving downtown shopping district, www.bookersbookstore.ca. And if you're in the Niagara Peninsula area, southwest Ontario, or in Hamilton area specifically, Brian Prince Bookseller can get you a copy of my book. Call Brian at 905-528-4508, 1-800-867-0090. Brian can get you any book in print quickly and efficiently. And he is located at 1060 King Street West in Hamilton, Ontario. www.princebooks.net. And I want to quickly mention Parapods.com. The good folks at Parapods.com have listed me on their website. On that site, you'll find a bunch of radio shows that specialize in the paranormal. My return descriptions don't fit neatly into any existing categories as far as the paranormal is concerned, but I am listed on Parapods.com, and I'm very pleased to be associated with Parapods.com.
Are you a paranormal radio show host? Your podcast not getting enough hits? And you want more? There is a brand new solution for you. A free podcast directory for your paranormal listening needs. Visit Parapods at www.parapods.com. That's www.parapods.com.
During my show, I'm going to be incorporating a musical break as often as I can remember to and as often as possible. On my returnguidebook.ca website, you will find a page called Music Credits. That's returnguidebook.ca/music. On that page, you will find a list of all of the artists and bands that I play, links to their websites, exactly what songs I've played and where and when I've played them. So I encourage you to check out returnguidebook.ca/music and go to visit these websites and buy some music. And I want to thank all the artists on that website, on that webpage. And on that page, I also have a disclaimer. And I want to mention that none of the artists that I play, none of the bands that I play are affiliated with me, endorse me, or support me, other than giving me permission to play their music. So I want people to keep that in mind because that's very important. And if you have any questions, go to that page, read the disclaimer, and it'll be clear to you exactly what I'm trying to say. So keep that in mind. And I want to quickly mention, out in Vancouver, Dennis Miller at penmachines.com has made a lot of music available for people for podcasting, and I encourage you to go to penmachine.com.
Some podcasts are all about the talk. My podcast, the Pen Machine Podcast, is all about the music, my music. I put it up there. You can download it, you can rip it, you can mash it up, you can podcast it, you can do whatever you want with it. If you want to come to my site and buy my album, you get a free DVD, but you don't have to do that. You can just get all the songs you want and do what you want at DerekMillersPodcast.PenMachine.com.
And I just want to thank Derek very much. In the meantime, I'm going to take a quick break here, and I'll be right back to start looking at my page, The Object. If you go to my show page at Blog Talk Radio, you can see listed in the link section a link to that page simply called The Object. You can go to returnviewersguide.ca, look down the home page, and you'll see a list of all the pages that I have back online, and The Object is the last one on the list. So that's two ways you can get to that page, and you can follow along when I read and talk about and explain the page, The Object. So I'm just going to take a quick break here, and I'll be right back. Once again, my name is Don Beaton, and I am the author of The Return Viewer's Guide. And I want to thank Isabeau.
Hi, this is Isabeau, and you can find me online at www.isabeau.com. That's www.isabeau.com.
Thank you.
I'm back. I am Don Beaton, and I am the author of The Return Viewer's Guide, and that was Isabeau. Isabeau's debut album, Love, Sun, mixes lush orchestral arrangements, edgy guitars, otherworldly effects, and a soulful voice that is distinctly Isabeau. Always with a bent for the positive, the lyrics remind you that there is light between the shade. Thank you, Isabeau. And check out my music credits page for links to Isabeau's website. Check out her new album. I encourage you to buy her new album. And the topic of tonight's show is a page I wrote, what seems like a long time ago now, that's a page I eventually titled The Object. And this is a page that really has a wide scope, and it's another page that kind of reflects my early writing and the early days for me when I was trying to find my way in how to describe and report the object. returnviewersguide.ca/theobject.html. It turns out that there is an object. For the first part of my life growing up, I did not understand that the object was unknown. Over time, I began to see that somehow I was going to have to figure out a way to report and describe what I saw. The very difficult reality of the sight of the illusion, the changed light of the moon, as it presents itself over the object's upper right horizon, was and is, as always, a very difficult, complicating factor. It's not just the object. There is the fantastic sight of the moon's changed light that goes along with the return. And quickly backing up here, the sight of the illusion. This is the term I used for most of my life and as a way to think about the changed light. I used the term, the word illusion. Now I think of it as the changed and lasting light event. But as a kid, I needed to find a way to think of it, and I picked the word illusion because for me it was the word that came close to describing what I had seen. Now I understand that the word illusion doesn't describe what I saw, and what I saw was not an illusion. However, that is the word I used for many, many years as a way to try to help myself think about this. Excuse me. There is and has always been an object. In other words, what I meant by that and when I wrote this was that, as far as I'm able to determine, this object is as old as our solar system, formed along with the Earth and Moon, the three bodies forming together along with the rest of our solar system. I know today there's this theory where apparently it's theorized that a body struck the Earth and somehow or other the moon formed out of this, and which to me just seems absolutely, totally impossible once you see how closely connected and the object is with the moon and the Earth and the orbits of the three bodies, just of those three bodies alone, without even considering the rest of the solar system. It's just too intricate and too precise for this celestial object to be a captured body. Surely in the end they will throw this present theory in the trash with so many other ideas and theories, and they will be forced to conclude that no matter how things look to them, or looked to them, that in fact this object formed at the same time that the Earth and the Moon formed. A very fast-moving, very massive, forward-rolling, crater-colored, moon-colored, incredible, impressive, and intimidating boulder. I understand that this fact alone will not be believed, never mind the sights within and out of the changed light from the moon. There is very little that I can do except describe the sights I saw. Once the object is once again within sight, it will be instantly apparent that the object I describe is one and the same. At this point, people will realize and know that my descriptions of the object are in fact accurate. There will be no question about it. At that point, it may or may not be possible for people to then take the next logical step. The rest of my descriptions concerning the moon's changed light are as accurate and as reliable as the descriptions I offer concerning the object itself, plain and simple. And that is a statement that I don't feel needs to any explaining whatsoever. The object's color matches the brightest areas of the moon. And I could have written a sentence, the object's color matches the color of the brightest areas of the moon. It looked to me like the object is slightly taller the way it rolls. As far as I know, the craters on the object's shining surface are unique. Towering crater rim pieces ring all of the craters as far as I know. I did not see a single crater that did not have these towering vertically standing crater rim pieces. I am guessing, but I can only suppose that these standing crater rim pieces are in fact pieces of original surface crust. A side that partially faces towards the Earth when the object is between the Earth and Moon is smooth and shows no signs of craters, or shows no craters. Perhaps the other side will also show no craters. And this is a guess of mine. I didn't see the other side directly the way I saw the side that faces the Earth, but it's a logical guess to make. The raised feature that becomes the overhang is the main largest surface feature. And I think of this feature as being a mound or raised area. The overall shape of the object is very similar to and almost looks like some sort of moon-colored giant crater-covered fat snail shell. I know this sounds too strange, but the similarity is remarkable. This is especially true when the tilting starts and the light blending with the moon starts, causing the object to open up and spread open down and wide. This effect exaggerates the object's snail-like appearance. This is the point when the object is described in a favorite text that I know as becoming undone, and that text would be Enoch. The second book of Enoch describes the object as becoming undone. Becoming undone is a very interesting, appropriate way to describe the sight of the object tilting at the viewer instead of rolling at the viewer. This effect happens at the point when the light from the moon is suddenly seen to the right of the object, and especially over the object's upper right horizon. And there are many names for this object. You name it. I mean, it's the object or the planet of the crossing. It's Nibiru. It's Planet X. It's Adoyle. Adoyle becomes undone. It spreads open wide down. And it does this. This effect occurs because once the light blending with the moon starts, as the object travels forward and down, the light that was reflected from the surface of the object remains in place, solid and unmoving. And so as the object continues forward, it keeps leaving more light behind. And it's as if it just stops suddenly still, and it's actually light that's been left behind and is now lasting. The lasting light event starts when the valley is seen to the right and the tilting starts. Because at first it's definitely a sphere rolling towards you, and then suddenly it's like a flat area tilting towards you. And that's when the light changing and blending has started. And so no matter what you hear or read about Nibiru or the planet of the crossing, it's not five times as big as the Earth, and it's not crossing way out wherever they think it's crossing. It doesn't do the things they think it does. It doesn't have anybody living there. The shapes and forms that are created are in the human form, but the object itself has nobody living there. It crosses between the moon and the Earth, and time will prove this out. So they guess, they're wrong. That just turns out to be the way it is. It's not my fault. It's not their fault. They're doing the best they can. And I don't even know these people. So it's not like I have anything to do with their incorrect guesses. They're going on ancient documents and they're doing the best they can. And if you don't know about the lasting and changed light, that's all you can do is guess. And I am going to be doing a show called Nobody Lives There. And on my page, Nobody Lives There, I describe a situation where I was in a basically in a room all day long with a filmmaker, and at the end of the day, even hearing it straight from me in plain English, he didn't get it. He assumed that there was a civilization on this object, and it's like, no, that's not what happens. It's light that's been shaped by shadows into recognizable shapes and forms, and it's very difficult to explain. So there I was, speaking in plain English to someone else who speaks English, and they didn't get it. So it's no surprise that when people try to interpret ancient texts, that it's very difficult. You just can't do that and guess correctly. The big rolling place is racing down towards us at this very moment. Nothing will change this very real fact. The object's influences and forces change the light from the moon. Once the object is between the Earth and the moon, the light from the moon is affected. I saw the moon, what the moon's light looks like, and I saw what it does. I can describe these sights, but that does not mean I can understand or explain how these sights happen. It is clear that the object's influences and forces do cause the moon's light to become changed. I know this, but I am unable to explain how this actually happens. Seeing this sight does not mean that you understand what you are seeing. That is also what is going to happen during the next return as well. For me and all the rest of the laymen, and for all those experts alike, everyone will be left stunned without any sort of total understanding. It turns out that that is just simply the way it is, and it just simply is the way it will be. The questions, the mystery, the physical power and pressure, the intensity of the sight of the moon's changed light, all combine with the rest of it and result in a very low level of total understanding. I can only presume that all those big experts out there will laugh when I say that they will be left stunned and without answers, just like the rest of us. We will see. They may be able to come up with a few answers to start with. I hope so. But they will be left stunned and numbed, just like the rest of us, to be sure. I've been waiting a long time to hear some sort of expert commentary. I don't think that first day after the next return we are going to actually hear anything profound from anyone. After a great deal of time goes by, progress will surely be made. That will give all the experts some time to reprogram everything they know. After they are all done rebooting their computers and themselves, that expert commentary I've been waiting for so long to hear may slowly start to actually happen. It's not as though I have anything against experts. The opposite is the case. I, like most others, can only have the utmost respect. In the case of the object and the moon's changed light, the simple fact is that there simply are no experts. In spite of this fact, there will surely be a long line of them all eager to give up some sort of insight. In spite of this fact, there will surely be a very long line of them all eager to give us some sort of insight. As long as there is TV the day after, the commentary without question will prove to be very interesting, even if any sort of true insight will more than likely be missing. True insight will take time, perhaps a great deal of time. I truly hope that one day the insight and understanding will come. Excuse me for a second. The awesome, very intimidating reality of the approaching object grows for me daily. The object is simply the most incredible sight I have ever seen, short of the sight of the changed light from the moon. When you first see the object, it will instantly make your hair stand on end. The closer your view of its surface, the more hair-raising the sight. I can compare the feeling to that suddenly caught in traffic feeling. Until I saw that the object actually until I saw the object actually going across my field of view before the object somehow arrived, I had no sense that it was actually going to miss not just the Earth, but me and my local neighborhood. The view through a telescope completely threw off my perspectives. The object actually crosses between the Earth and Moon at some sort of great distance from both the Earth and the Moon. Faced with the sudden sight of the object, just somehow right there, I had no idea what was actually happening. I had no way of knowing that the object was going to miss the Earth and was actually going to do so at a substantial distance from the Earth. I had spent a great deal of time writing about how I was seeing and thinking from an extremely narrow perspective. I was a totally unprepared and completely unsuspecting kid who had seen the Moon at least once through a telescope. Then I saw that the inside of the telescope's eyepiece was all lit up inside. It was my turn. I bent down, and the sight of the Moon was gone, and in its place, the sight of the massive, awesome, forward-rolling boulder seconds before it seemed to settle into place in front of the Moon. I had no idea that the light from the Moon was going to suddenly emerge from over the object's upper right horizon and way to the right of the object. I just simply thought that the telescope was pointing at the next big thing that people look at when they look up into space using a small backyard telescope. At the time, I just simply had no clue that the object I was suddenly seeing was actually rolling towards me from in front of the Moon. I simply had no way of knowing that the object was covering the Moon and that the telescope was in the exact same position that it was in earlier when I first saw the Moon. It was only much later before I figured out and then realized that the telescope had not been moved and that the object was in fact in front of the Moon. First, all round, it was only the sight of the object, the big rolling place. I was only seeing the spherical shape of the big rolling boulder. There was not any sort of huge expansive place attached to the right side of the object at the start of my view. Then, not slowly, but instead, suddenly, to the right, there is the sight of an incredible valley. I have read about this place many times since I saw it. This is definitely the site of the famous ancient valley of old. While I was watching this, I simply had no idea that the new site of the very big place that is suddenly seen over the object's upper right horizon, the valley, was the light from the Moon. The Moon's changed light at this point in the return before the first appearance of the black spot of the shadow under the overhang that develops to the left is the site of a very, very convincing real-looking valley. Even after the wave of the shadow finishes crossing the surface of the brilliant object, turning its lower half or lower two-thirds deep black and has gone past the object's horizon into and onto the light from the Moon, and even as the shadow goes into the distance of the valley, the sight to the right still looks like a valley. This is also true even when the flat, hard, smooth, expansive ground effect that suddenly forms to instantly meet and provide a place for the shadows, the points of the shadows to travel over when the shadow does pass through this region. I'll back up and read that again. What happens is that as the shadow travels into the valley, it travels over the valley floor, and initially the valley floor is just a flat layer of white clouds. And as the shadow moves, instantly, it's as if these flat white clouds turn into smooth, hard rock, and the shadows travel over this rock, transforming the flat white cloud as it moves. That's what I'm trying to say here. So I'll see if that's what I get out of this paragraph when I read it again. Even after the wave of the shadow finishes crossing the surface of the brilliant object, turning its lower half or two-thirds, its lower half or lower two-thirds deep black, and has gone past the object's horizon into and onto the light from the Moon, and even as the shadow goes into the distance of the valley, the sight to the right still looks like a valley. This is also true even with the flat, hard, smooth expanse ground effect that suddenly forms to instantly meet with and provide a place for the points of the shadows to travel over when the shadow does pass through this region. This is a totally incredible thing to see as the flat, smooth, hard-looking ground builds outwards from the edge of the object's upper right horizon's light and then continues to extend out further across the valley into the distance as the group or series of tall, narrow shadows that are spread out from left to right extend out deeper across and into the valley. As the points of these widely strung out tall, narrow shadows cross over the flat white cloud effect that is seen within the area of the valley, the flat white layer of cloudiness is instantly turned into flat, hard ground that builds outwards from the viewer. The interaction between the shadows and the moon's changed light is central and all-important. The majority of the fantastic sights that are seen are made of or from the moon's changed light and perhaps also the light from some stars and perhaps even planets. It is actually the effects of the shadows that is the actual key to the creation of the shapes and forms that are seen by the viewer. And this is all important. This is how it all happens. The object changes the light from the moon, and then the object casts shadows into the light from the moon from the standing crater rim pieces, and then these shadows sculpt and shapes within and out of this changed light that are recognizable shapes, from flat areas to wall effects to mountains to the actual human form itself, and also some other human-looking type forms that are depicted around the world. And I'll be talking about exactly what shapes are seen and where you can find these shapes around the world as depicted by the ancient people. Excuse me. Even though it's very hard to realize when you're seeing this take place, all the shapes and every fantastic sight, an event that takes place in the light that is light, is actually the result of shadows interacting with and sculpting the moon's light as that light arrives as separate areas or waves of moving light from over the object's upper right horizon. I try over and over to describe these one-way moving, forward pulsing areas or wave areas of very bizarre looking light. This effect I'm trying to describe happens later during phase 2. During the valley phase, phase 1, the shadows interact with the flat, white, cloudy effect. It is about the way the light from the moon is affected and changed by the object's forces, and then it's about the way the shadows from the object interact with, change and sculpt, and create shapes and forms with and out of the changed light from the moon as it emerges from over the upper right horizon and from and to the right of the object itself. Incredible and very bizarre starts to describe it. The crater rim pieces may show the thickness of the object's crust. The entire object is a staggering sight. Until the object actually crosses your line of sight or field of view, the view through a telescope does show the object basically rolling down right at you. The object does always miss the Earth. How could it be otherwise? Certainly, a collision with this object would shatter our planet, and the object always does miss. Besides knowing what an orbit is, I don't know very much at all about orbits. I know a bit more since the day I wrote this, but the fact is, I'm not a solar system scientist, and I've spoken with a space historian who did help me understand orbits much better than I had understood them in the past, but in the meantime, I don't know orbits. In spite of the fact that I don't know much about orbits, I can take a guess. It seems only logical to me that for the sake of some sort of starting point, it should be safe to presume that the object will never actually collide with the Earth. Certainly, I have to believe that most people will feel as though my descriptions of the object, its surface, and especially its craters and their fantastic rim pieces was something I could have only dreamt up. I can't help that. Even what should be the basic hard ground of the object turns out to be very nearly impossible or impossible to believe when you hear about it. I can only say that there is no easy part here to describe or believe. Towering, tall, thick, and massive crater rim pieces circle these craters. The sight of these craters are the source of the inspiration for the many stone circles around the earth. Where else would or could the ancient people come up with this sort of concept other than from this incredible object's surface? The very huge towering rim pieces must have been visible from the earth with the naked eye and were copied and modeled by the ancient people. These craters are obvious in the rolling foreground of the site of the valley as well. After the sun's light reflects off the tops of the crater rim pieces that are still illuminated above the shadows wave down over the far slope that faces into the valley, the upper right horizon, the tops of the illuminated crater rim pieces roll and drop forward and are no longer there. The light that reflected off the many separate crater rim pieces is still seen there and remains visible in the crater rim pieces' original location. A brilliant shape is produced. There is time to view the shapes above the height of the shadow before the formation of the focal point or the heart of the lasting light event, the awesome good. And this, there is time, and in my return viewer's guides, I do give the timing and the order of events. You have seconds, but I tell you what to look for to the left and to the right. You do have time to look down over the far slope, and you will be looking at the far slope. The trick is to make sure that you don't remain looking at it too long, because you have to look to the right, and you have to let your eye follow the point of the big main shadow, because that is the point of it all. Everything's oriented on that far slope. Everything's oriented towards the distance of the valley, and that's what you have to do as well. After you see the far slope with its brilliant illuminated shapes above, the black line of the shadow, and especially once the two brilliant triangle shapes make their appearance, have a look at them, and then look to the right. And check my return viewer's guide for the exact details as to the timing, because I do give exact details as to the timing and how long you have. And it's important, because you want to be looking to the right, but you also want to see these shapes that is light reflected from the top, mainly the tops of crater rim pieces that are gone, and the light remains. It's absolutely stunning and amazing. There are many examples of this effect where light is seen remaining behind in the location where the object's surface features were once located. This is another strange effect that you will see that is hard to realize when you are seeing and very hard to describe later. I realized most of what I understand only later and not while I was seeing the last return. At the time, I just watched, and it was literally years later before the pieces started to fall into place for me, and I started to understand a little bit about what I saw. As I mentioned, the object's far horizon is a very special area of note during the first phase of the illusion, the valley. Many fantastic shapes above the black line of the shadow are just simply suddenly there. Once the wave of the shadow leaves the object's surface, the shapes are there. The entire slope seems to be also facing into the distance of the valley. Many, many brilliant shapes are arrayed over a vast area. I remember that I've always thought of this area as having a cityscape at night sort of look. All of the shapes above the slope are now a part of the overall valley, and they don't move independently. Their area looks like a natural part of the foreground of the valley, all one big place. Everything seems unmoving in this area over the far slope. I always hate to try to guess at the numbers of things, whether it's the numbers of craters or the number of cratering pieces that had their light left above the line of the shadow. I try to guess and I try to be conservative. Like I have said a few times before, I was never very good at guessing the number of jelly beans in a glass jar. The numbers are not low. There are many, many more craters than just a few. There is no question that on an object-wide basis, there are hundreds of craters and thousands of crater rim pieces that stand vertically and ring all of these craters. This is something that I know is actually true, but I always do hate to give numbers. I can't guess the actual numbers, plain and simple. Instantly, everyone will recognize the fantastic crater rim features because the standing stone circles are well known throughout the earth. It turns out that it's all about the shadows that the crater rim pieces cast into the valley, the moon's light. Shadows are cast into the moon's light from craters on an object-wide basis. There is the big wave of the shadow, and there are separate individual shadows, and a main most important group of shadows that emerge ahead of the wave of the shadow. These main shadows sculpt and shape the lasting light's main elements. The main elements later accompany the focal point or heart of the lasting light event, and now a very truly bizarre behaving changed light, solid looking light, changed lasting solid looking sight. Well, I guess I blew that sentence, didn't I? Well, it was bound to happen. Like I said in my earlier shows, I'm not very good at reading it out loud. And so there's a good example. But the main elements, which are also sculpted and shaped by individual shadows, accompany the focal point of the moon's changed light, or the heart of the lasting light. And these are the main elements. That's a term I used to use to describe them. There's the focal point, or the awesome good, and the other main elements that are arrayed beside and behind him are also in the human shape and form. And I think of it as the guy in the crowd. He's the guy with no shirt, and they're the crowd. Bizarre describes it. Incredible describes it, and impossible to believe also describes it. But this is why this event is so special, because this event generates the sight of the human form, and this surely had to be the first example of the human form. And somehow the ultimate mystery relates to how life looked up, and the sight of the changed light caused the life that looked up to somehow grow into this shape, become exactly in this shape, because we are exact copies of the sights in the changed light. This is a magical event. It's a special event. This relates to the Earth's and humanity's greatest treasure. It all comes from one event, and that's why it was so important for the ancient people to see this, because they understood this, and this is why it's important for me to talk about this, no matter how difficult it is, no matter how this sets me up for ridicule, and it does, and it has. That's okay. You know, when you know what happens, it gets to the point where the ridicule from people who don't, if, you know, it's the one thing for a person not to believe me, that's okay. That's what I expect everyone to do, is not believe. But for a person to actually ridicule me, puts them in a position where they'll be held accountable later. The time is short. You know, if you want to step into this ring, you know, I know where the ring is and where the ropes are, and you don't. And I'm giving you a chance to find out what's going on. And if you want to be nasty and if you want to be negative, well, that's going to look bad on you later. If you don't believe it, that's fine. It's what I expect. In the meantime, instead of being negative or taking the time to ridicule me, just take this and file it away. This is information you need. One day you'll go back to this point when you heard about this, and you go, oh yeah, okay, now after I see the shapes above the line of the shadow down the far slopes, I got to look to the right. And thank goodness that you remembered that, because if you look to the left, you won't see the point of the shadow go up and down and draw the squiggly line that sculpts and shapes the muscular back of the awesome good. The exact same point that's written about in ancient texts. It's important. You want to look to the right. That's where it happens. It's not to the left. So, you know, even when you're seeing this event itself, you can be seeing this event and miss some of the big sights actually happening. Now, you can always join in later, but you need to know which way to look and when to look. And ridicule me now, fine. You know, it barely affects me. No one likes to be ridiculed. And this isn't easy. I'm not saying it's easy for me. But I saw what happens, and I'm explaining it as best I can so that when you are hopefully seeing, you'll also know the order of events, which way to look, what to expect. You'll know to brace yourself. You'll know, you've heard the idea that this light arrives with a pressure and a force that's indescribable. And when you're suddenly feeling that pressure and that force, you'll go, oh, yeah, I remember hearing about this. This is what he was talking about. I can literally feel this light. And it's bizarre. And it's intense. It's an intense, incredible experience that will leave you blown away. And I know that for a fact, because that's the effect it had on me. And it took me a long time to put this together. Now, you have the advantage. You have the advantage of my experience, because I can tell you that everything that you see above the actual hard ground of the object is light. And you won't be able to guess that at first. You might think now that you can. But without hearing the idea of it, it's very, very unlikely that you're going to look out into this valley and go, oh, it's the changed light from the moon, and you're going to have an understanding. It's not going to happen. You're at an advantage now, and hopefully this advantage will allow you to see further than I saw and with a greater understanding than I had. And this is part of the point for me. I know that it's important to do this and to talk about this, and time will prove me out. I don't have the proof now. Once the astronomers spot this object rolling down, it will be their job to alert the media. I've already talked to the media, some people, and I've tried to give them a heads up. They're all going to have a role to play, and either they're going to be successful or they're going to fail. Now, there's no way we can properly prepare, but we can do some things ahead of time. And one of them is the astronomers need to be ready to report this. When they see it, they can't keep it a secret. We're all going to be hoping for the best possible outcome here. And keeping this a secret is not going to lead to the best possible outcome. The best possible outcome comes from the idea, first and foremost, that this event can happen safely. No matter what anyone says, no matter what anybody thinks, this event can happen safely. And that doesn't mean that it's impossible for there to be negative effects on the ground from this celestial object crossing so close to the Earth. That is another whole story. But that's not my area of things. My area of things is exactly what you see and the idea that this can happen safely. So the media will have a chance to tell people this can happen safely, because here on one hand they're going to have exact descriptions of this object that suddenly appears from the depths of space. How could anyone have known this unless they had actually seen it themselves? And the fact that they'll be able to realize, and it'll be obvious to people that I had to have seen the object, will also make it obvious to people that in fact this event can happen safely. That is important. That can lead to the best possible outcome. It can help in the big picture of things. When you people detect this object, put the news out there. Put my information along with it, and that will help the situation. It'll have a calming effect. And then people can get onto the idea that there's something to see that happens there. It's an object and a fantastic visual effect that happens with the light from the moon in the background of space. ReturnViewersGuide.ca is my original website. ReturnGuidebook.ca is a website I've done in support of my book. Check out the causes I point towards on my Terms of Use page. Help out the hospital and maternity wards I point towards. Thank you very much. Good night for now.